Mali has again postponed elections. The military says a democratic transition won't take place for up to 5 years. So what happens now? And can West African regional leaders put the country back on the path to civilian rule? This is Inside Story. Welcome to the program. I'm Derine Abugaida. Mali was supposed to hold presidential and parliamentary elections next month, but the military-led government has pushed that back by up to 5 years. Army Colonel Assimi Goïta, who staged 2 coups in less than a year, blames continuing insecurity in northern Mali. Major political parties have condemned the delay. And the regional bloc ECOWAS is threatening to impose more sanctions on military leaders if a democratic transition doesn't happen soon. We'll bring in our guests in a moment, but first, this report by Victoria Gatenby.
In downtown Bamako, Malians are absorbing the news the elections they were promised next month aren't going to happen and may not for up to 5 years. Opposition leaders say the decision by the transitional government is unacceptable.
Holding meetings to say they want to be in power for 5 years. I think this is anti-constitutional, anti-democratic, and it hasn't got any legitimacy.
When junta leader Colonel Assimi Goïta was sworn in last July following 2 military coups in less than a year, he sought to unite Malians and said presidential elections would be held. But on Thursday, a conference charged with recommending an election timetable said the polls should be delayed by between 6 months and 5 years. Goïta's supporters agree now is not the time for elections.
Post-electoral crises are more dangerous than the situation we're in today because we've seen genocides, we've seen bloodbaths across the world. Today, I think we need calm to reassure the population here and elsewhere. The international community must understand that the lesser evil today is addressing the concerns of Malians.
Despite criticism of the interim government, analysts say it has managed to bring some stability to Mali.
The government in Bamako is, to a large extent, a step ahead of everyone. You just have to look at how they've been able to change the reality on the ground in a very incremental but very steady basis.
The West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, is expected to discuss the situation next week. It's already imposed sanctions on officials and has promised more if Mali's leaders don't produce a plan for a democratic transition. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera.
So how did we get here? Well, back in 2012, Tuareg separatists took over large parts of northern Mali. Al-Qaeda and ISIL-linked fighters also entered the region. In January 2013, former colonial power France sent in troops to remove the armed groups. But after struggling for 9 years, France announced that it would end its operation early in 2022. Protests against former President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta began in June 2020. Many accused him of failing to fix insecurity, corruption and the economy. So military leaders took power 2 months later, forcing Keïta to resign after 7 years in office. The international community condemned the coup. The junta leader, Assimi Goïta, had agreed to return power to civilians. Elections were supposed to be held after an 18-month transitional period. Let's bring in our guest. Joining us from Bamako is Ornella Moderan, head of the Sahel program at the Institute for Security Studies. In Accra, Emmanuel Kawezi Anning, director of research at the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. And joining us from Copenhagen is Sine Kolde Ravenkilde, who's the senior researcher on security and development in the Sahel region at the Danish Institute for International Studies. Welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us, Ornella. I'll begin with you. You say that you're not surprised by this postponement, but what is surprising to you is the boldness of proposing an up to 5-year delay. What does that signal to you?
Well, as you said, the suggestion to postpone the timelines, I think, should not come as a surprise for for most stakeholders. We used to have electoral timelines that were quite unrealistic in the first place, and by which the current transitional government, as opposed to the previous one, never formally adhered to. So a postponement would be suggested is not that surprising. What is indeed is the notion that this would go into 5 years. Now, it should be noted that you know, officials in Bamako, as well as the foreign minister himself, have clarified, including to the Malian national television, that in fact these 5 years should be seen as a maximum timeline. So one question I think is, to what extent are these five years really what the government is aiming for, or as opposed to what extent is it a posture for negotiations?
Okay, so how is this being viewed in Mali itself?
Well, the opinions are very mixed. So an important element, I think, is that this suggestion does not come from nowhere, right? So the Malian government organized what really wasn't a conference, as was mentioned in your report, but a process, a consultation process, a national consultation process, which involved thousands of people across the country, and ended up with this suggestion. So what this process does is that it lends the proposition of extension some level of apparent popular legitimacy. This, of course, makes it much harder for external actors like ECOWAS and others to simply discard it in the current context.
Okay. Important point. Yeah, apologies. Let me just bring in our other guests. Yes. That's an important point that you raise. Kwesi Anning, so as Ornella was just saying, this decision was backed by a national consultation process. So do you think then it's going to make it difficult for bodies like ECOWAS or others to question it?
Well, I think ECOWAS lost the plot right from the word go for several reasons. Right when the coup took place, ECOWAS misconstrued and misunderstood the shifting forces, I mean, power correlations. That's number one. Number two, ECOWAS misunderstood the changing geopolitics of Mali itself and then the sub-region and the role of other external actors that the new leaders, you know, could go to for support. You know, so the range of tools in ECOWAS's toolbox actually is becoming limited by the day. So for me, as Ornella has said, this has not come as a surprise. And I think for ECOWAS to presuppose that people who are tested power would basically just go back to the barracks and hold an election, when those who are pushing for change themselves have very disturbing skeletons in their cupboard.
Okay, so Kwesi, so when ECOWAS threatens sanctions, which it has, for the postponement of these elections, first of all, will it follow through? And second of all, will sanctions make a difference?
Sanctions will make a difference at all, because the range of sanctions that are available will not be effective. What, you are going to prevent the head of state and his people from getting medical help, freezing their bank accounts, preventing them from traveling, preventing their kids from going to school, wherever they go to? These are minimal, superficial interventions that do not touch the crust of the problem. The problem is that the old political elites have lost ground. They've been corrupt, abusive, disrespectful. And these new leaders are using a language that appeals to the people. And as Ornella has said, the decision for the 5 years is only a bargaining chip, an opening for negotiations in which they will eventually come to, say, 2.5 years to 3 years. But getting to that yes point depends on the quality of the negotiations that ECOWAS is going to bring on the table.
Okay.
And I think right from when this series of coups started, I think ECOWAS has not managed to show that leadership that we are looking for.
Okay, let's bring in Copenhagen. And Sine, over to you. What is your take and how do you see this postponement?
I agree with my colleague that this might not be very surprising. And it also seems as if what the junta has actually achieved here is constructing quite a lot of a gray zone of a constitutional order that allows them to operate quite freely, because the international coalition led by the European forces is definitely in a dilemma here, because they are so deeply engaged. And the logic behind the European contingent is also that the European security depends on the security in these African states. And that means that it's very difficult at this point in time to actually make any solid sanctions against this. So that way they have sort of, the UNs have sort of gained a strategic upper hand as far as I see it. What I think is a bit surprising is to what extent have there been other actors, which Kwesi also announced, that have made some sort of guarantee to security or guarantee for backing the UNSA if they decide to go ahead with this plan, which we also see now has been contested by several political parties.
When you say
Mali.
Other actors, who are you referring to here?
Particularly the rumors around the Wagner Group's engagement, but of course also Russia's engagement. And Russia is, of course, not a illegitimate partner. But the problem for Europe is that Europe has quite a lot of different points of interest in other regions as well. So Europe and France also does not necessarily approve of a Russian influence in the region. And what's problematic in that optique is that these external actors end up being engaged for other reasons than creating peace and stability, but they are more there to protect their own geopolitical strategic interest. And that, to me, seems quite dangerous. And what we're also seeing is that from the junta, there's a lot of populist speak, and there's also a lot of disinformation campaign. But all that disinformation campaigns about French interest is not only produced by Russia itself. We must not forget how much actually popular discontent there is with
Okay, we're going to talk about the French involvement as well as the Russian involvement in just a moment. But first, Ornella, one question to you, because the military is blaming continuing insecurity in northern Mali as one of the reasons for this postponement. Does the security situation in parts of the country actually allow for the government to hold elections at this point?
So the simple answer would be no, but the security situation right now is extremely difficult on the ground. State representatives are estimated to be actually present on the field in about a third of the country only, so it would be really difficult to hold elections. That said, this is not the only reason, and perhaps not even the main reason why this postponement is happening. Another important element is the appetite for change that Malian expressed, in which this government is essentially promising to provide if given more time. The memory of the 2015 election after the coup in 2012 is still quite vivid among public opinion here. And there is a feeling that back then there was a sort of unfulfilled promise that Mali let ECOWAS and others rush it into elections that essentially didn't change anything, didn't solve anything, and that now 7 years later we're still in this situation. So this appetite or this this eagerness for change is also what the transitional government is promising. So that I think is important to mention, along with this notion of having a five years extension. They have proposed a more specific timeline for the various reforms, which are fundamental reforms that Malians are asking for, and which previous elected elites, as well as their international partners, failed to deliver, in fact.
Okay, Kwesi Anning, which or who, I mean, Sine was touching upon this a moment ago, but which country would have been given its blessing for the postponement? Surely this is not a decision that the military can come to decide on themselves, is it?
I mean, the military guys are smart. They've looked at the geopolitical situation. They've seen the changes. And they've decided to play their cards and play very deftly. Now, the two top men have studied in Russia. They have their links. We are seeing a resurgent for Russia with an aggressive foreign and defense and economic policy all around the sub-region. We are seeing the Wagner Group, you know, in Central Africa Republic and elsewhere. And herein lies the crust of the Malian discomfort, the sheer hypocrisy of those who are saying, but why is the Wagner Group here? Almost every Western European country talking about the role of the Russians have had their own mercenaries crisscrossing the sub-region before.
Now, the Russians however, do say that Russian trainers are in the country as part of a bilateral agreement between Mali and Russia. That's what they say.
And there are other bilateral agreements in which their trainers are in Mali.
So what's Russia doing? Has it stepped in to fill the security gap when France announced that it would be withdrawing its troops?
No, I mean, Russia has always been around. I mean, let's not forget that Russia has grown out of the old Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union has been a major player, just like China, on this continent since the 1950s. Okay, so these are old relationships that are being given new clothing. Now, quite a number of analysts from elsewhere tend to forget and to misconstrue the character and the analysis emanating from Bamako. But this is not only about Bamako. The significance about Bamako is that were the international community to fail, how will Guinea see this? What leverage can we have with Guinea? And will this cascade into other countries where similar difficulties, as Onela was talking about, within the political, economic, and social elites are creating the basis for instability. So getting Mali right is very important. Unfortunately, I think the way most people are looking at it is wrong. Russia is not a problem. The Wagner Group is not the problem. Certainly, we need to look at a broader stakeholder group in which people who have been marginalized, women, youth,
right,
and felt victims,
right,
have their voices brought onto the table.
Okay. Sine, would you like to add on to what we were hearing from Kwesi Anning?
I definitely think it's a very important point raised by Kwesi, this thing that even 10 years ago, no one had imagined this kind of jihadist insurgency in the Sahel. And we've seen the speed and the escalation through which violence, which is not only committed by jihadist groups, but also by all kinds of self-defense militias that in the vacuum of security provision by government forces is able to thrive on violence. And also we see how security forces are also producing violence in itself. So it's extremely important that this whole construction of this as only being a jihadist threat, it also points to so many deep-lying problems of security provision for ordinary citizens in the region, which is not only limited to Mali, but of course the kind of impunity that is seen and the kind of diplomatic deadlock that is observed in Mali is extremely worrying, because I think what we need to understand is also that these foreign interventions are not occupying forces. They are interventions by invitation. And that means that they rely on this host nation to cooperate and to invite them into the territory. But that also gives a lot of leverage to these kinds of governments, however malconstructed and malfunctioning they may be. So what we are saying in the academic is that these partner states or the states in the Sahel, they are able to tame interventions. That means that they are completely able to use all these foreign investments for pursuing their own interests. And I think that's something we need to take into consideration when there is this idea that we can kind of construct security in a region like the Sahel. We forget actors on the ground with political interests.
Let me bring in Ornella.
Economic interests.
Let me bring in Ornella, yes, because Ornella, over in Germany, what we're hearing now is the parliamentary commissioner for the armed forces said that the German army should evaluate its role in Mali and consider ending military operations there. As we've been talking, the French military is in the process of winding down its operations in the country as well. Are these moves welcomed by Malians?
The posture that international actors are taking generally is appreciated in very different ways by Malians. Of course, there has been some concern about the drawdown of Barkhane. But again, I mean, this is not what the postponement of the electoral timelines mainly.
No, it's not. We're just looking at it now in the context of the security situation
yes,
in the country.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I would like to get back to one thing you said earlier, which, you know, was this question of, well, whether or not Malian authorities could have just taken this decision on their own. I believe this is one of the mistakes that the international community has been making from the get-go to minimize the agency of national authorities because they emanate from a putsch, perhaps also for other reasons. One of the things we have seen through repeatedly, I think, is the ability of this government to shift the tables, to shift power dynamics, and essentially create leeway for negotiations for themselves, and to essentially, at the end of the day, get what they want. So this kind of minimizing and treating or implying that they should be treated as junior diplomats, I think, is a strategic mistake, which I would not encourage perpetuating.
Kwesi, would you like to respond to what we heard from Ornella? And also, we just have a few minutes left. What do you think is going to happen next? How is this going to play out?
Well, I think I agree with Ornella. These consistent strategic miscalculations by outsiders that the regime in Bamako doesn't have agency is false. What we are going to see in the next couple of months is an ECOWAS that would seek to regain the initiative, but it has very limited tools to play with. You know, so I am guessing that we are going to look at a compromise solution that looks at anywhere between 2.5 years to 3 years for the transition process. Now, within that period, the regime and ECOWAS will have to get the extremist violence under control, which I know is almost impossible because that violence is spreading. But Mali is a touchy point. And the way that ECOWAS and the wider international community with the Malians resolve this problem will be indicative of how stable the sub-region is in 2022 and afterwards.
Okay, Sine, last words for you in 30 seconds. What do you think is going to happen next? How is this going to play out?
I also see this continued diplomatic game in between these different actors. I also see that perhaps the 5 years was an optimistic sort of bit, and perhaps a negotiated settlement within a time range of 2 to 3 years it could be what we're heading at, and probably that the European visions and interventions will have to accept that. Because I also see that we are not withdrawing from the Sahel. I think what it's important to raise that the French is reorganizing its troops, so it's more of a training and assist mission, but also at a distance. So we're going to see more drone, more kind of high technological engagement, but not necessarily less investment in the region.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there on that note. Thank you so much for joining us, Ornella Moderan, Emmanuel Kwesi-Anning, and Sine Cold Revan Kilde. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory. From myself and the whole team right here in Doha, thanks for watching and bye-bye for now.